Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast hails from Mayville, Wisconsin, and has an incredible story of grit and perseverance. He kicked off his music career with his band Faintly in Wisconsin, and after booking the band's first six shows, he actually had to cancel all of them for open heart surgery back in 2008. For those of you who don't know, that requires the collapsing of both lungs, so as a result, he had to retrain them and to sing again. Fast forward a few years later and some lineup changes, the band relocated to Seattle and took on the name Among Authors, gearing up for a huge year, including a national tour, NPR Tiny Desk appearance, and headlining the Crocodile June 29th in Seattle. Please welcome the man with the golden voice, often likened to Jeff Buckley, with the compositional genius of prog rock greats, and the brother of season one guest Jason Ketterer, Ian Ketterer of Among Authors.
Man, that's made me sound way better than I think I actually am.
No way. Do you get the Jeff Buckley thing a lot?
Yes, I do, and every time I hear it, I'm like, do you ever listen to Jeff Buckley? Because that guy was stupidly good. So it's humbling for sure. And I mean, when I listen to Jeff Buckley, I'm like, man, this dude is, no one can touch him. Just
He's
no one can touch
fantastic.
Him.
Yeah, well, so it's funny. We were talking about Philip Johnson earlier, and he introduced me to your music, and that was his first thing. He's like, the guy is Jeff Buckley. And then when I was watching your KEXP in studio performance, there was a bunch of the comments that were like, this dude is like Jeff Buckley. So you may be selling yourself a little short.
Man. No, when you hear Jeff Buckley, it's like he has this vocal that you think has opened up all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear another part of the song. You're like, oh, no, he's still going.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that
he's
was
just,
it.
He's just, oh, now he's really low. Oh, okay, now he went way high and he did it in a really weird way and worked all those notes in that I didn't even think of. And yeah, he's crazy.
Did you listen to him growing up then?
One of mine and my brother Jay's and our guitarist John, one of our favorite bands is a band called Ours. And we listened to them a lot growing up. Like, we used to skate all the time and skating and listening to music. Jimmy Necco, I think, was friends with Jeff Buckley. Jimmy Necco's the singer of Ours, who also has an insane voice. I think we got turned on to Jeff Buckley through Ours, kind of, because as we started listening to Ours, Jeff Buckley's name kind of came up, I think. I'm not really sure, but that was probably in high school or something,
right.
Or just out of high school. I can't remember, but I'm glad I know of him because, man, not only a great voice, but also a phenomenal writer and you know, yeah.
You mentioned kind of coming onto his music in high school. Were you writing music at that point? And I guess what else were you listening to that kind of made you want to start?
Yeah. So, I mean, Jeff Buckley probably was out of high school because in high school, I listened to things like Dream Theater and
cool. There's that prog rock.
I was like, yeah, I was so, I like loved James LaBrie and his vocal. And actually, I shouldn't go on the record saying this, but I really don't like it now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I like really don't like it. And it's because when I listen back to a band like Dream Theater, I'm not going to rip on them because they are in so good when it comes to musicianship and what they're able to do. Like, mm-hmm. I'll never touch that.
It's very, very mathy.
Very mathy and very, like, Jordan Rudess was, like, the person I listened to when I was trying to figure out how to play a piano.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, I just have to do crazy runs, like, up and down the piano, and then I'm going to sound great.
Yeah.
and, you know, I think throughout the years I kind of just grew out of them and started listening to a lot more emotional sounding, you know.
Yeah, they're very fantastical.
Yeah, and I didn't get anything emotion-wise out of them at all. And listening back to them now, it's even less so.
Yeah.
But when I did listen to them, I was glad I did, because it was right when I was trying to teach myself how to play piano. And when you listen to someone like Jordan Rudess, and I mean, there's a million other great piano players out there, you realize how bad you are.
Yeah.
You know, and I still realize how bad I am to this day.
Yeah.
And they put you in your place really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, all the time. So it's great to listen to people like that, because I literally will never be as good as that person. As far as writing, I started writing songs when I started playing piano. I think I taught myself how to play piano because I wanted to teach myself also how to write music.
Right on. I had a similar experience. I played piano, but I couldn't write on it because all the music I listened to was guitar driven. But the second I got a guitar, I should say trying to write songs. I don't know if they were.
Yeah.
Well, I know they weren't good. But.
Yeah. I mean, that. I mean, half the stuff you write when you first learn, it's never going to be good.
Oh, not at all. Exactly.
You think, you're like, this is something. This is definitely something.
This is probably going to be my big break.
And then a few years later, you're like, that wasn't anything.
Yeah.
And I hope no one hears it.
Totally.
But yeah, I mean, so to put a timestamp on it, I think it was my senior year in high school.
So were you fully self-taught then?
Yes.
Nice.
Yep.
I needed someone to whip me into shape.
I had no choice but to be fully taught myself, because I hated anyone telling me what I should be doing musically.
Fair.
Always. I always hated that. And it got to a point, I think, yeah, I was talking to you a little bit before I wrote you an email about the fact that it got to a point in high school where I didn't like band. I was in band since fifth grade up through junior year in high school. And it got to a point where I actually hated it because I'm just like, I don't like, is music like a fun thing? I'm not having fun. I grew up musically inspired by my parents and all that stuff. And I don't really feel it right now. Like, I don't really want to do anything musically. And then when I quit band, it's like, oh, this is what music is. It's not marching band. It's not playing a trumpet when I don't want to. I mean, I loved playing Jurassic Park, but, you know, like, that's not what it's about. It's fine if that's what it's about for someone else, but that is not what it was about for me. Yeah, my band teacher liked me after I quit, so,
You mentioned, like, the relationship improved and all that stuff.
It was so strange.
Yeah, was it just that the confines were off?
So I want to say at the time, I didn't give it that much thought. I just knew I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the time I wasn't like, I don't want to be told what to do musically, because I didn't think that far ahead. I was just like, I don't like this, you know, but that's always how I've been. It's like, I don't like this. I'm going to do this instead. And like, I mean, I almost fell out of high school because I didn't like doing the homework. And not that I couldn't do it, I just didn't want to do it.
Right.
So kids, don't do that. It's not a good thing to do. But then there's people, you know, I get really inspired by people who think the opposite of me on that too, which is they were able to get through school. They were able to go through college in music. They know so much theory and it's like a side of my brain that I'm just like, I could do it. I believe I'm smart enough to do it if I really want to, but I'm also the stupid in me. It's like, yeah, but, you know, who cares?
Right.
I don't want to do that. But, yeah, I mean, there's people like my friend's Hannah Ben. She went on tour with Sunlux. I don't know if you know who Sunlux is.
Mm-hmm.
So good. They're so good. And Hannah Ben is also an insane composer. Like, she's... Her solo album, look it up on Spotify. It is beautiful. But she thinks, I think, the opposite. Well, the stuff she composes and the events that she does are just crazy. Like, it's so inspiring to see people that are so good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what I will be able to do. I don't know.
Yeah. We were talking about it the other night at Connor Byrne, was kind of this idea of maybe not being the most technical players, but like being great at what, like, for example, like you're among authors, has you all have created a very, very unique and amazing sound, but you were kind of like, I think this is like my sound and I wouldn't go do something else.
You know yeah.
what I mean? And I feel kind of the same way. I'm like, I'm good at my sound, but if someone was like, oh, go play this jazz piece or this classical piece, or I need you to fill in over here, I'd be like, I can't.
Okay. I think when I was talking at Connor Byrne about that, it was a lot of it was has to do with the fact that, like, I know, I can speak for me and at least my brother, because my brother said it. I wouldn't just say this about him, but he's mm-hmm. told me, we've talked about it before, we're not like really musicians. like I said, the people in like Dream Theater, those are fucking musicians. Those are people who you go see and you're like, whoa, that is so good. Like, you, how do you play that with your hands? That's not possible.
Right.
You know, but I think the enjoyment for me is taking what's in my head and somehow figuring out how to get it into music that mm-hmm. the four of us can play.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't get that in a project that I wasn't so focused on or, right. or involved with. Like if I was playing keyboard in someone else's band, or, you know, I may love that band, but it's not going to give me the feeling that is the only thing that really actually makes me play music in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I got to stick with myself and my dudes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, but, and I think chemistry plays a big part of that too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's something to be said when, like, you find a crew that can create that feeling
and oh, yeah.
bring that artistry to life, which, because I think on the flip side, a lot of people probably see and hear you all do what you do and go, how, that same thing you're talking about with, like, Dream Theater, where you're like, holy crap, how do they do that? They're probably sitting there going, how do you craft a song like that? You know?
Maybe. Hopefully there's someone out there doing that. I mean, I don't know. I think I'll never really actually even be able to answer that question either, because you get the people in the room and you, I mean, for me, chemistry, when you're talking about a band's chemistry, for me, it's not really all about just everyone having crazy ideas and coming together and making some great song.
Mm-hmm.
It's about everyone understanding that it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And all of us are okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us are okay with the fact that as of right now, we don't get paid much.
Right.
You know, and in fact,
what do you mean? We have 0.0004 cents a stream. What do you mean you're not making bank?
We just have to get like 60 million streams a month.
Yeah, that's so it. That's all you got to do to
this
pay
podcast. The reason I'm coming on this podcast is so that amount goes up to 60 million.
There you
so,
go. Yeah.
I think, you know, but going back to the chemistry for me has always been like, if I can go like, hey, Jay, we need this thing on our website. Okay, mm-hmm. yeah, I'll do that. Or, hey, John, do you want to come over after work and work through this thing with me, even though maybe you're not even doing anything while you're here, or maybe I'm not doing anything, or we're both doing something together, but like, let's work on this thing. And people just find the time in their schedule because they yeah. want to find the time. That's chemistry to me.
Yes.
And 100%. that is like the most important thing. And when you go on tour, you want those people with you. You don't want the people who are like, this is going to be a fucking party.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't even drink. So tour is never, nothing's a party to me.
Right.
Nothing, like literally nothing's a party to me. I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I enjoy doing things, but I don't really want to party.
Right. It's like, I want to play the music and.
Yeah.
Let's go somewhere else.
Man, that sounds so boring. But
no, I mean,
I do a lot of fun things, people.
I want to dive into the touring aspect of things too, but I guess before we get to that is y'all put out that record I Am Become. And the reason I want to talk about this first is it's been very DIY, as you mentioned, like having your bandmate come on over, hey, let's like grind through this and get through this. You spent a very long time putting that record together.
Yeah.
I guess without diving, we don't have to dive too much into the nitty gritty, but I know it's like, it was like a multi-year process, and for anyone attempting to do it, and even for yourself, what would you say like the most valuable lesson was that you learned during that time?
So there's, do you want the most valuable mixing lesson I learned, the most valuable writing lesson I learned, the most valuable life lesson I learned?
Yes.
Cool.
All of the above.
Then my answer is go do it.
Right on.
No, I mean, okay, life lesson, my most valuable life lesson I learned that I'm still learning, and I think I will continue to learn until I die, is balance. Haven't figured it out yet. I'm always like, oh yeah, okay, now I'm going to work really hard, really, 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 really hard. Okay, now I'm not going to.
And now I'm burned out. And
now I'm burnt out, and I kind of, you know, ruined some stuff around me because I'm burnt out. That's difficult. Like, I think when you have a creative mind, I guess if you could call it that, that doesn't shut off.
Yeah.
Even if you're not working on something, like, my brother will be the first one to tell you, because I annoy him all the time because we live together. I'm always tapping, like, on my thigh, or for some reason, always have something in my head, and it's usually not someone else's music. Usually it's something that I haven't written yet that maybe I'll write or I'll never think of, but it's just a subconscious thing. I don't know, but so you can't turn it off, and that messes with the balance a lot.
Yeah.
Because just like a day job, you need to be able to turn that off. I can turn my day job off. That's easy.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So easy. And actually, I'm lucky I have the job I do right now because it's easy to do that. But, you know, creatively, that screws with your balance because it's just always on, you know?
That like hits home for me. The other night I was driving home and I called my girlfriend because in the back of my head is always going. And when I can't go work on it, you know what I mean? Drives me insane when it's like, it's going and I feel it and there's the songs. And if I don't touch it or tap into it, it starts to drive me crazy.
See, yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, go on if you're.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's hard because trying to explain that to someone who's not involved or doesn't have like a project like that, it's hard to be like, the reason I'm upset right now is because there's this thing that doesn't exist yet and I need to get it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what is that thing? Well, I don't know.
I don't know, but just trust me.
It needs to happen, and I need to go spend time on it.
Yeah.
And I may go spend the next 6 hours trying to make it come out, and nothing happens, and I have nothing to show for it, but I need to go burn that time.
Yeah.
And it's going to drive me crazy.
And you're one step ahead of me, because I shouldn't even say this, but I get to a point where I know I should go burn that time to try to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I get so self-conscious in the fact that if I don't get it out when I burn that time, that it's going to run me to the ground. Or if I get it out and I don't like it, I'm like, well, I suck. So then it puts me in a space where I don't even want to work on it half the time. I'm like, I know I need to. It's in my head. I don't want to do that right now because what if it doesn't turn out the way that I wanted it to? Yeah. Which is a really bad way to think. But then that psychologically screws with me, and then other things around me get screwed up because I'm just like always in my own head thinking like, oh no, I didn't work on that today, or I did and nothing came of it. What does that say about me? Like, dude, it's so bad.
Do you think that all artists have some sort of anxiety?
Because I hope not.
Because I feel like even the biggest artists that I hear, like whether it's folks in film or music, there's something that's always just up there, and we're egotistical enough to want to put it out there and want people to love it so much, but then we're also so self-conscious that we're somehow just as scared to like go put it out or create it. Which is just crazy because those should be mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But somehow they're not.
No, they're not. And the thing about, like, you know, putting something out and having people relate to it and grasp onto it and applaud you for it and, you know, come to your shows and buy your tickets, buy your merch, buy, you know, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It is first off amazing that people support you in that way, you know, mm-hmm. and people understand, like, why supporting you in that way is important for you, you know, not just for them to get something out of it, but they go because they want you to succeed, mm-hmm. you know, and that's huge.
Yeah.
When I'm thinking about putting something out, sadly, I'm not thinking about those people at all.
Oh, that's good.
No, that's not. I love that people want to support us, and I mm-hmm. love so much that, because at the end of the day, they keep you pushing through the shitty stuff where true. You're like, I just don't want to work on this right now. Like, my head is not there. Like, I can't. Then you get people who are like, no, you, like, when's the next album coming out? When, you know,
right.
like, yeah, we gotta get on that. Yeah. When I'm thinking about music and putting something out, I'm all just self-conscious. It's not, the other part's not there at all. Mm-hmm. It's just like, whoa, this is going to be horrible.
I guess the reason I say it's good is because when people start writing outside of themselves and to try and please an audience, or, oh, this is what people like last time, so I'm going to go for this, then you're not giving them what they were attached to in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess that's why I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. Don't think about them. Go get it within your...
Yeah. That's definitely create. That's a good point. That's definitely true. You don't ever want to. It's not true. There's some pretty popular pop stars that are pretty successful. So, you know, if you want to do that, there is a market, and I'm not knocking on them. They are making way more than I'm making, and you know, but it's not.
It is so funny, especially now with the data-driven approach. There's this podcast I listen to, And the Writer Is, which I don't know if you're familiar. It's awesome. It's by Ross Golan, and I've plugged it a few times just because it truly is my favorite. And he's written some, like, the biggest pop songs the past decade. And one of the things he just brought up, I think 2 weeks ago, was, like, these past 2 years, because of data-driven approaches to music, it's the smallest range, like, top 40 hits have had in, like, forever. They take into account, like, tempo and key and amount of chords used, because there is so much as this tempo works, this works.
Yeah.
So go recreate this and we'll get it on the radio.
Oh yeah.
And he said it's like the smallest margin, as far as whatever this point system is, and like execs are looking at it. And
it's insane.
It's crazy.
It's a factory. I mean, it really is a factory.
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading an article on Spotify about Spotify. I mean, I think it was like a year ago at this point. They're working on creating software that will allow them to automatically write songs that people will attach to.
Oh goodness.
They're just going to put them in their own playlists with everything else.
Cause it'll be passive revenue for them at that point. They don't have to pay it out to the labels or songwriters. Oh man, that's so sad, but I believe it, especially those playlists where you just want to relax to something and it's just an instrumental and you're like doing work.
Yeah. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, you bastards, actually, could I just work for you and do that? I'm like, I mean, I still need a day job right now, and that would be great for now. You know, I'll just do that while I'm working on my other stuff. So I was mad, and then I was like, just, you know, ride the coattails of Spotify, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy just how much it's changed, especially the past, like, what, 10 years alone, how much the landscape has just...
It's crazy, and I've talked to so many people about that too. Like, Andrew Jocelyn, actually, he's a local, super talented violinist and composer. I've met up with him before, and we've talked, like, about business and stuff, and like, he knows a lot more about the licensing side of music, and the wisdom that guy has about the business that you just wouldn't think of is inspiring. I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this. I know we were talking about Spotify and I think being screwed out of money, right?
Yeah. Like, but the licensing game is huge, and it really is a whole different approach to music if you write for sync, or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that kind
yeah.
of where you're going with it?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, now yes. it's just a plug for Andrew Joslin.
Hey,
so,
there you go.
Andrew Joslin. He's got solo stuff. He's working on movies. He's a super talented dude. He worked with Macklemore. Go check him out.
There you go. We kind of talked a little bit about, you know, you all did the record in your basement and whatnot and learned a lot. And what resources would you say are were most valuable to you during that time? You're like, hey, just go do it. And you're learning as you go. Mm-hmm. What were you turning to? And I guess, were there specific channels or resources that you're interested in?
Yeah, so I listened to one podcast in particular a lot. Like, was Pensado's Place.
I'm not familiar with it.
Get familiar with it.
I'm about to.
It's real good. He does this thing called Into the Layer, which is only a tiny section of the podcast episodes every week. Or I don't know how often they put it out, but which is just like a tip for mixing. And it's always so useful. Like, it's stuff I'll never think of on my own. And I learned so much from that podcast alone. And that guy's like a multi-platinum, you know, mix engineer. He mixes massive pop records and stuff, so like definitely knows what he's doing. And just the information that, so basically the podcast, they just bring on either big producers or audio engineers or mixers, mastering engineers, and it's only, you know, they bring on one person each episode, and it's always people that have worked on, you know, Drake or like really the largest artists in the world.
Right. Like all the airtight records that are like,
yeah, that you'll never touch. Like you'll just never get there. Sorry, everyone. You'll never get there. You want to listen to the people who, you know, are so beyond your skill level. Mm-hmm. Well, so beyond. And I learned a ton from him, and I would always be listening to those podcasts on my way to work, on my way home from work, when I went go from work straight to our basement to start, you know, work on a record. I had just listened to some podcasts about recording, you know, because I didn't go to school for recording, so it was all kind of also self-taught through YouTube. And if you want to learn how to mix better, that is definitely a podcast you should listen to all the time.
His credits are crazy. I'm scrolling through.
Yeah,
right,
I know.
Now,
I told you. I told you. Like, it's insane.
All the way from basically 1988 to now.
Yeah.
Mixes over 200 songs a year, at least 200 songs.
Yeah, and it's not just like local. It's not local bands. It's like the biggest people in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From like, he's got Pink, Wiz Khalifa, Jamie Foxx.
yeah. So. Oh. Endless YouTube searches on like, whoops, Pro Tools blew up again. Yeah. How do I fix it? Or like, you know, I don't know how to use, like, I know I should be able to do this thing in Pro Tools, but I can't. So just YouTube it. And that was our life. I don't know. Wink Sound on YouTube. And then there was a bunch of other, it was always just, you know, random questions and headaches and, you know, how to problem solve, you know, and I swear with Pro Tools, like, half the time we were recording, we were trying to figure out how to problem solve, an issue. Like,
it's so massive that the you fat thumb one key, it all of a sudden stuff's messed up because of how granular it is.
And it takes, like, it takes you out of creating a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think we got to a point finally in like the last year of kind of a really big push in getting the album done, where we got our studio to a point where we knew in which order things would boot up the best to not give us errors, or which you know, how to, it's so just Pro Tools was so finicky that like we got it down to a science at one point. We got like no errors for like months. I'm like, oh, this is amazing, you know. Yeah. But now I'm not even using Pro Tools, so.
Oh, what are you using?
Studio One.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it.
Personas makes Studio One. I'm using Studio One 4.
Cool.
Still learning how to use it. I don't know why I switched, because I feel like I finally was getting
the hang of
Pro Tools, and now we just switched. It's just, you know, I don't know. I think there's some stuff in Studio One that is very useful, and my focus, if I was going to switch DAWs, my focus was to switch to one that freed up time, because I don't have time.
Right.
I actually don't have any time. You know, with Studio One, I can drag a plugin. I have my list of plugins, and not only that, I can create thumbnails for all my plugins.
Oh, that's super cool.
Like Persona's plugins already have thumbnails, but like if you bring in Universal Audio plugins into your DAW in Studio One, or, you know, Arturia plugins or whatever, you can actually, when the plugins open, there's a button that just says create thumbnail and just automatically creates it. So then
you actually find
your images on the right side. So you don't have to scroll through all the names. You just see, you know, visually, and you just drag it on your track. It automatically routes it for you. It just does. So there's some like quality of life things that Studio One does that Pro Tool, I feel, just isn't doing.
Right.
I think there's other DAWs that are doing similar things. It's just, I don't know. Persona's like the people there too. Seem really responsive as far as feedback and like listening to the community on like, okay, this sucks. Like, you guys should fix this or make this better. Like Avid's terrible at that. So that was another big thing. Like, I want to be in a community of not only people using it, but the, you know, the company itself that is like, that actually values the people using it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I've always thought if I do switch, I'll probably switch to Ableton just because...
I use Ableton too, yeah.
The producer in Paradol that I work with uses it, and I've just gotten accustomed to what it looks like, and it's so much more intuitive.
Yeah, and it is more intuitive once you're used to it. When you first open Ableton, you're like, what the hell is this? Like, seriously, I was like, wait, there's like two different views, and like, whoa, what? This doesn't make any sense. Why would anyone use this?
Yeah.
And then you start realizing why it makes sense. You're like, oh, okay, yeah. For like producing and actually writing, this is kind of great.
Yeah, the arrangement is so nice.
Yeah.
Like, I'll throw down, now I can like throw down an arrangement in like a couple minutes. Like if I've already written the song, I'm like, boom, here, everything's done. Cool, now let's get to it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas Pro Tools, I'm just like,
I
still haven't even fully figured out.
I know.
Everything.
I mean, I may go back to Pro Tools to mix. Maybe. I haven't decided. I also don't really want to mix. So if we can get that dude who's just, or you know, man or woman, doesn't matter who the hell it is, you know, that's just fantastic. And I don't have to think about that part. That would be so lovely.
I mean, it's just a whole different art form.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned it kind of did impact the art, but do you approach writing differently now that you've gone through all that? Like when you were writing and trying to record and put this together?
Yes. That's actually a good question. Totally. I think when we were starting out, like when I started recording years ago, like 4 years ago or something, I thought to myself, and actually when I started the band, when it was first called Faintly, like back in 2006 and stuff, I was very like, in my head, I was always thinking like, okay, we can't record anything that we won't be able to do live, because that's not okay. And that stuck with me for a while. And then when I started really focusing on making a full length record and with, you know, among authors, and really was like in it, my gears shifted completely. I'm like, wait a second. Why the hell was I thinking that way? Like, these are two completely separate art forms. They're literally not the same at all. Once I grasped onto that idea, it's like, okay, no, we just need to make the best record we possibly can at the time. You know, hopefully our next record is better because we'll have learned more. But at the time, we need to make the best thing we can. And it doesn't matter if we can't play live. It doesn't matter that we're not thinking about that right now. We figure that out when that comes.
Yep.
And so that's, once we started doing that, it's like, oh man, I can do whatever the hell I want now. I can put 7 guitars in here. Sure.
Yeah.
Or I can, you know, I can put this weird synth thing in here. I don't know how we're going to trigger that, but whatever.
Yeah. And that's kind of what will be fun too, is it's either you do figure out in some capacity how to represent it, or someone gets a completely different experience live and gets to experience it in a new way. Like yeah. you said, two different art forms.
Yeah, yeah, so. Totally. And I think the one thing that I did stick to for sure, and the rest of our band, we all stuck to this, is both entities, the performing live and the recording the music, the actual recorded project, has to have as much emotion coming out as humanly possible. However you get there, I don't know. But one thing I